Suddenly they heard something from somewhere below them in the tower.
They're here.
Gato emerged from the darkness of the mill, his face tense. Lightning flickered around the mill, making his cheeks glow with a ghostly pallor. The horseman and Marie Mandeville waited.
Yeah, broken the main drive gearing. Takes days to repair. And chilled the two men.
So, where are they now?
All eyes turned toward the looming bulk of Suncrest. Gato pointed, blinking away the rain.
There! Lights moving in the north tower.
Harry Gato wasn't a man much given to attacks of panic, but he had bitten his lip so hard that blood flowed over his chin, unnoticed in the teeming storm. His heart was pounding with the certainty that the Outlander had managed to outthink and outflank them. Gateau's men were good, well-trained, and their armalites were kept in tip-top condition. But he'd seen the blasters the Outlanders carried, that Baron Nathan had taken into his collection, and knew what they could be capable of, particularly in the wrong hands. He corrected himself.
Or in the right hands.
Marie Mandeville was possessed by a terrifyingly cold rage. She sat her stallion quietly, watching as the mud-soaked Sekhmen attempted to break into their own ville, knowing that it wasn't possible to communicate with the main force who'd been sent around to the front courtyard entrance. The strong likelihood was that they would have no idea that something had gone grievously wrong at the north flank of Suncrest. Rain trickled down her smooth cheeks, dribbling off her chin and onto her gloved hands. Despite her calm exterior, she was twisted with anger, desperate to have the Outlanders taken prisoner so that she could have her way with them. Pay them back for this, for having to sit like a triple stoop outside her own home in the middle of the worst chemstorm in years. Her fingers tightened on the riding crop, wanting to spur her horse in among the servants and lash them into greater activity. But enough sanity remained for the woman to know that this wouldn't be productive. She caught Harry Gateau's eye and gestured to him.
Shoot the fucking door apart!
Gateau had also lost patience, ignoring the questioning look from his baron.
Take out the hinges with the armalites! Rest, keep out of the way!
It was vital that they didn't delay any longer. It was difficult, with all the lightning reflecting off the barred windows, but the sec sergeant was certain that he'd seen lamps moving along the weapons gallery. The rifles opened up, shredding the door to white splinters of torn oak.
They're shooting off the bolt to the hinges. It's gonna be real quick now.
Ryan had locked and bolted both the outer and inner doors, expecting the hunters to track them down quickly. In fact, it had taken several invaluable minutes longer than he'd figured. Now they all had their blasters, and it sounded like the Sekhmen still weren't inside the bill. The seven friends were grouped at the landing by the three dead men, looking down into the black stairwell. Ryan held one lamp, JB the other, but their mellow glow only reached a few steps into the darkness.
When they get in, they'll likely come straight here. Gato will know we're after the blasters. What we need now is to get outside again before they realize we're gone.
They'll know this place like a rabbit knows its own warren. They can hunt us down and take us by sheer numbers. Listen.
JB looked behind them.
Through the first door. Can't be long before the rest of the garrison starts wondering what all the noise is and comes running. Then we get caught between the hammer and anvil.
Ryan nodded, his mind racing through the options, selecting and rejecting. To go deeper into the core of the ville, and then buy some time, or to try to get out as quickly as possible. There was only one realistic chance.
We're moving.
Where to, Dad?
Ryan jerked a thumb down the stairs, toward the shattering noise of the Sec force trying to break into their own fortress.
There.
Marie Mandeville's horse was alongside Gateau's, and she was leaning from the saddle to speak to him. Despite the pouring rain, he could almost taste the feral scent of excitement that oozed from her body through the soaking clothes.
I will have blood if they aren't taken quickly.
I know that, mistress. They can't get out. The rest of the ville's secure, and we're out here. There isn't any way they can escape us. Eventually.
Eventually?
Like most of the men in the ville, Harry Gateau had spent a little while as bedmate of the woman. The look in her eyes made him shudder with memory. He had escaped more or less whole from their couplings. He had been one of the lucky ones.
Eventually, mistress. But if they split up and try to hide within Suncrest, it could take some time to snare all of them.
For a fraction of a moment, Gateau thought he was going to feel her silver-hilted whip across his face, and he flinched instinctively. But Marie controlled herself.
Yet we will take them all.
He turned to see his men beckoning and calling out that they had finally managed to break down the second sectors to the North Tower. He dismounted and ran forward, Marie at his heels, leaving their horses to be taken care of.
Keep away and let me go first!
He forced his way through, aware of the instant relief of being out of the teeth of the Chemstorm. The vestibule was as black as pitch, and Gateau almost immediately stumbled over something. Someone.
A woman.
They killed a woman! Must be up the stairs getting their blasters back!
Let's go get the Outland bastards!
Gateau pulled a face in the darkness. If Ryan Carter and the others had really gotten their blasters back, then there was some blood going to be spilled in the next few hours. They must have used some trick to get the serving girl to open the outer door for them. With most of the garrison out on the hunt, and the destruction of the mill stopping all power, it would have been deeply confusing. Even so, it crossed Harry's mind that the woman was lucky to be dead. That way, she was spared punishment from Mistress Marie. After pushing their way in, they'd dragged her body out of the way through the unlocked second door, bolted both, then headed upward. Gateau stood still, elbowing back at someone who was trying to push past him.
Wait, damn you!
It was difficult to visualize precisely where he was standing. The main stairs were ahead of him and to the right, circling up, with one of the dusty old tapestries covering the small alcove beneath them. There was no other corridor available to the Outlanders to escape. They had to be higher, on the second or third floors, where the guns were. They had to be. Gateau was trying to decide how many of his shrunken party he should leave behind as a last line, in case Ryan or any of the others managed to get past and escape through the two broken doors. Three should be enough. Then he heard an unmistakable sound, only just behind him.
Out of the way, or I will bury you, face down in cold pig shit! Why have we stopped?
I'm thinking about putting a rear guard...
Don't think! You get good Jack to do what you're told! Get up the fuck damn steps right now, all of you! And I want them taken alive, if possible. But I damn well sure want Michael Brother and the one-eyed man unharmed, do you hear me?
But if any of them...
Even in the total blackness, he could feel her anger. Knew he was wasting his breath.
Fine. Sure. Let's all go kick some Outland ass.
Harry Gateau had hardly noticed that there had been a sudden and total shift of power in the last few minutes. Somehow, Baron Nathan had become a peripheral figure. Seeming shocked by the odd turn that events had taken, he had given up the lead to his voracious daughter, and was now standing disconsolately among his armed servants.
Anyone got a lamp?
Several of the men had self-lights, but the rain had affected most of them. Eventually, three or four managed to get theirs working, giving a weak and fluttery yellow light around the cramped space at the bottom of the stairs. Above them, the top four floors of the tower were totally dark and silent.
You go first, Gateau.
Yes, lady.
Gateau carried the armalite in his right hand, his disfigured left hand moving cautiously up the damp banister. A brace of setmen followed him, with Marie coming forth. Plodding doggedly along at her heels was the Baron, water still glittering in the fronds of his snowy beard. The rest of the group pressed close behind. And the sound of their coming carried clearly to Ryan and the others. It was desperately crowded in the tiny alcove under the stairs, with only the dusty wall hanging between them and the posse of Sekhmen. Everyone had their guns drawn and ready, their nerves strung taut, waiting for someone to rip the tapestry back and reveal them in the darkness. Ryan put his eye to a ragged tear in the flimsy material, seeing that the lobby was now empty, except for the ruin of the two doors and the motionless body of the dead woman. The occasional flashes of lightning gave enough illumination for him to be sure that there was nobody left downstairs.
How long, GB? About 3 minutes. But those old clockwork detonators aren't that reliable. Might not even ignite this stuff.
Can't we go now, Dad?
Soon. Real soon.
What's that smell?
Gateau turned to the man.
Lamp oil, you stoop. So you all better be fucking careful with those self-lights. Start a fire here, and all a Suncrest could go up.
Gateau had divided the force on the first landing, sending 10 of his men to explore that level, and also to try to make contact with the rest of the garrison. With the Baron, Marie, and the remainder, Gateau was halfway toward the part of the tower where Mandeville's weaponry were kept in their showcases. His keen hearing caught a sound from the blackness below. 50 feet below, Michael rubbed the edge of his hand and pushed the corpse of the hound out of the alcove.
What's wrong, Gateau?
Heard. Down below by the door.
The fear that had been simmering at the back of Gateau's mind when he'd been thinking about posting a rear guard came flooding back to him, and he remembered the curtain space below the stairs. But he still wasn't sure enough to risk annoying Marie by making a mistake.
Well?
I'm gonna go back down.
He glanced around on the winding stairs, checking the faces in the uncertain shadows. He sent six of his sec-men toward the next floor, while he and four others readied themselves to descend again. Baron Mandeville seemed to have slipped away into his own thoughts.
What the fuck is going on there?
Gateau suspects a trick. Some of the servants are going to the top of the tower. We are going back down again.
We?
Keep your voice quieter, Father. Yes, Gateau, four men, and me.
And me.
At ground level, Ryan and the others had heard the briefly raised voices, but it hadn't been possible to catch what was being said.
Less than a minute. Best move out into the open before any more of the dogs get brave enough to come in here after us.
Ryan led the way, picking a careful path over the dead hound, the splintered wood, and the body of the woman servant that he'd killed only short minutes before. The half-dozen sec-men emerged on the top landing, their feet splashing through the puddled oil and the broken glass from the lamps. They held their lights high above their heads to minimize the risk of igniting the volatile liquid, spotting the corpses of their colleagues. Only one of them saw the device. The clockwork detonator was 2 1/4 inches in diameter, code-marked in trim white paint. FMGE-5577, stamped Special Forces, Vietnam. JB had packed it into a nest of black powder, placing a handful of low-caliber ammo along with it. He added a couple of dubious Second World War hand grenades, making sure that the edges of the lake of spilled oil was soaking into the bomb. And, of course, there was the plastic container, marked with a single word, napalm.
What the fuck is...
The six sec-men were converted into staggering fiery dolls, waving their arms as the jellied flames consumed them. Whatever the napalm touched caught fire. Gateau and his group stopped, all hanging onto the handrail for support. Not far below them, Ryan and the others were halfway up the door when the bomb went off. And the invincible Ville of Suncrest, in the old state of Kansas, began to die. While hastily preparing his makeshift booby trap, JB had broken open several of the cases that held samples of explosives or grenades, hoping that the explosion would scatter the flames and set fire to the whole gallery. It succeeded beyond his wildest expectations. Within a dozen heartbeats, the dry wood and the elegant draperies were ablaze. Even with the power on to work the pumps, it was doubtful that much could have been done to save the Ville. The damage might possibly have been limited to the North Tower if there had been light for the defenders to work out what was happening and work together to fight the inferno, but the place was in almost total darkness, most of the servants massed in and around the main courtyard and hallway inside the front entrance. Within seconds, there were more muffled explosions, one of them blowing out a row of windows on the topmost floor, splinters of glass showering around Ryan and his companions. Slavering tongues of fire protruded from the shattered casements, licking hungrily at the damp air. The chemstorm seemed to have sucked all the light from the sky, leaving the land midnight black.
To the trees, quick!
Ryan led the way, the others tumbling out of the narrow doorway onto the muddy grass, among the frightened horses and panicked hounds.
Grab some horses?
We'll be too spooked. We got the blasters and they're in chaos. Once we get in the trees, we head to the redoubt and watch our backs. I don't think they'll follow us too close.
Both men paused on the side of the cleared land nearest to the ruined mill.
That blood-eyed bitch and her father might want to hunt us down, whatever the cost.
At that moment, there was another cataclysmic flash of lightning and a demonic peal of thunder that made the earth shake with its violence. Simultaneously, Harry Gateau raged from the doorway, followed by four sec-men. A second later, Marie Mandeville was out, with her father a few steps behind her. Ryan was closest to the forest, JB at his shoulder. Because of the size of the entrance and the broken wood that blocked it, the others were strung out. Doc and Dean only a few yards ahead of the sec sergeant.
Take them!
Marie's hands raised, as if she were about to claw her own eyes out of their sockets. But now the scales had tipped radically in favor of the Outlanders. The sec-men were both outnumbered and outgunned. They skidded to a halt, their armalites only half raised. The Baron had drawn his revolver and was steadying it, aiming toward Ryan, who was about to gun him down with a Sig Sauer. Only Doc was quicker. The scattershot ripped through the man's curling white beard and opened up his throat, slicing his arteries apart and flooding his lungs with his own blood. He staggered a few steps backward, tripping over his spurs, and crashed down, his hands reaching out helplessly toward the doorway of his vill. That shot was the signal for everyone to open fire. Ryan put down one of the sick men, while a burst from the Uzi destroyed two more. Kirsty killed the last of them with a couple of well-aimed rounds from her snub-nosed, double-action Smith & Wesson. But not everything went the way of the Outlanders. Marie dodged to the right, stooping and picking up her father's fallen blaster, snapping off two rounds toward Michael's crouching figure. Harry Gitteau lived up to everything that Ryan feared about him. Gitteau saw the reality of the danger in a single glance and moved toward the only possible cover, the tethered horses, dodging toward them, firing a dozen rounds from his hip as he ran. He didn't expect to hit any of his adversaries, but he knew it would be enough to make them all duck down. Dean tried to run away from the sex sergeant, but his boots slipped in the wet earth and he fell over, dropping his big Browning. Gitteau never hesitated, diving like an eagle on a lamb, scooping the boy under his arm before vanishing among the skittish horses.
Let go of me, you son of a...
The cry was muffled by the sick man's iron fist. The two of them, along with Marie, were hidden among the dozen or so animals.
Should we chill the horses?
No. He'll take out the boy.
Ryan dropped to his knees, holding the Steyr rifle, using the starlight nightscope to try to get a clear shot at either Marie or Gitteau. But all he could see were the kicking legs of the horses, making it impossibly risky.
Any moment now and you get 100 armed men on top of you, Carter. Give up, and I'll guarantee the boy lives. Best offer you'll get all day.
Gitteau appeared, crouched and almost totally hidden behind Dean, the muzzle of his Armalite digging into the boy's chest, his finger on the trigger. A silhouetted figure in the gloom, lit by the prolific glare of the flames.
His dead mother, Dad! Run!
Let him go, or I'll put you down!
Even if you could hit me in this light, Mildred, nothing will stop my fingers squeezing and blowing the kid away!
Ryan was aware that time was racing by, and that what Gitteau said was true. The rest of the Vill's garrison could arrive at any moment, and the standoff would quickly be over. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Mildred standing like a statue carved from jet, the right arm extended, the ZKR 551 pointed at the sex sergeant.
No, Mildred, don't.
It'll be all right, I promise.
Don't do it!
Gitteau crouched even lower, so that Mildred could see very little of his head or body, but it didn't matter. Ryan was watching carefully, ready to blast the grizzled sec man the moment after he shot his son. He didn't know how Mildred could possibly take him out, while simultaneously preventing him from firing the Armalite. And he couldn't believe what he saw. At 40 paces uphill, in dreadful light, Mildred had put the Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round precisely where she'd aimed it. Both Gitteau's index finger and the trigger of the automatic rifle were blown off. The Armalite fell to the wet grass, and Dean scampered toward the rest of the group, dodging sideways like a little crab. Harry Gitteau stood still, blood gushing from the severed joint. He shook his head in amazement.
Best shot I ever saw. Best I ever...
Mildred's second round went right through the bridge of his nose.
Dark night.
Dean arrived to a skidding halt in their midst.
Thanks, Mildred.
Ryan looked at the burning vill, the dead bodies sprawled in front of the broken door, the horses, their flanks glistening in the rain, the flames making them look like fiery creatures from the spirit world.
Let's get out of here.
No.
Why not, Michael?
The woman...
Leave her be.
Got to finish it, Ryan.
There's no time.
There's time for this.
Michael started to walk back toward the burning North Tower, holstering his gun.
Chill her if you can, Mildred. Don't wait, just do it.
The brilliant magnesium flare of vivid chem lightning almost blinded everyone.
Shit! I can't see!
But they all heard the crack of the Baron's revolver, held in the hands of his vengeful daughter. The ribbon of azure silk had fallen out, and her hair tumbled unchecked, soaking wet, reaching below her waist. The white blouse was transparent in the rain, and she stood spread-legged, the spurs on her maroon boots gleaming in the firelight. Her face was contorted with blind rage, her eyes narrowed to razored slits.
Ah, you bastard, little fuck brain!
The gun bucked in her hand. Michael never deviated from his path, walking slowly and steadily toward the woman. Ryan had the Steyr to his shoulder again, but against all his impulses, he didn't shoot. He waited and watched. This time, the bullet visibly kicked up a clot of mud a yard to Michael's right.
It's an Ivor Johnson cattleman model. Sounds like it's firing a .44. 5 rounds gone, just one more to go.
Now the gap between the two was less than 10 yards, and still the bare-handed teenager didn't hesitate. The revolver was steady in Marie's gloved fist, centered on Michael's chest.
No, she's going to miss.
Michael seemed to sway to one side, like a cobra dodging the charge of a mongoose. Brian felt the wind of the bullet passing him by, like the warm breath of the hooded man with the scythe. The somber sky lowered over the last act of the drama. Marie stared at Michael, pulling the trigger on the empty blaster again and again. She threw the revolver at Michael, now less than 5 paces from her. His hand plucked the gun from the air, throwing it over his left shoulder without a single glance. They all stood mesmerized by the drama that unfolded before them. The beautiful woman, in her tight, elegant leather pants, falling to her knees in front of the inexorable figure of vengeance, her face turned up to him. The young man, whose black hair pasted flat to his skull by the storm, reached out to her with his pale, strong fingers. The passing of Marie Mandeville, mistress of the mighty Vale of Sunquest, was mercifully brief. Far more merciful than her evil life merited.
May the Lord have mercy upon her vile soul.
Amen.
Now let's go. Once we get safe into the woods, I don't believe that the Sekhmet will have any stomach for following us. Not with their home burning down about their ears and their leaders stiffening in the dirt.
Look, we got company.
A number of ragged and filthy men and women stood in the shrubs at the fringe of the forest, watching them in motionless silence.
Wildwooders.
Dean hefted his Browning.
Easy.
Ryan laid a hand on his son's shoulder, gesturing to the scene behind him.
It's over!
The Wildwooders slowly nodded, smiled, and faded back into the shadows beneath the dripping trees as mysteriously as they'd appeared. It was time to move on. The glow from the fire lit the sky behind the seven friends as they crossed the stone bridge over the south fork of the Antelope, heading back toward the distant redoubt. Ryan had been right. Disheartened by the reversal in their fortunes, all in the space of an hour, the inhabitants of the Ville made no effort to pursue the destroyers of their lives. It was evening when they got to the bluff at the edge of the plains that concealed the entrance to the redoubt.
Anyone want a break for the night and rest up? Move on at dawn?
Ryan's suggestion was greeted by universal disapproval.
The past few days have been most exceedingly trying, have they not? Well, my dearly beloved brothers and sisters, let us bravely go toward the new world and get the jump completed. Then we can, perhaps, rest a while.
Long as the bastard Cannies don't try for us again.
Michael spoke for the first time since executing Marie Mandeville.
We can handle them. Fact is, we can handle just about anything.
But none of them was ready for the unspeakably vile smell that oozed from the entrance to the redoubt. It seeped out at them before they'd even taken a step inside the military complex. JV clamped a hand across his nose and mouth.
At least we know what it is.
Doesn't make it any sweeter.
Ryan knotted his white silk scarf around his face.
I reckon most of the muties will have left.
Christy looked around, staring out over the plain behind them, when a gentle breeze whispered in the tops of the trees. She glimpsed the faint orange light that was the burning Ville.
It's difficult to feel anything about this place, but I can't see much life. Just the most death I ever felt. Anywhere, anytime.
The scene inside was barely describable. Despite their ability to devour most kinds of carrion, it was obvious that the digestive system of the cannibal muties hadn't been able to cope with the thousands of rad, poisoned, rotting corpses that had filled the redoubt. Many of the muties lay dead, showing every sign of having died in hideous agony, their knees drawn up to their chests, hands clutching their swollen abdomens, lips tugged back off yellowed teeth, and a rictus of terrible pain. A few were still alive, and their low cries echoed along the stinking passages and chambers of the vast fortress. But none of them tried to attack the seven invaders. Ryan picked a path around the dead and the dying, the Sig Sauer cocked and ready in his hand.
Think I'm gonna be sick, Dad. Ugh.
By the three Kennedys, I once walked through Hell's Kitchen in the bowels of New York during a summer heat wave. Many a poor soul went to pay their respects at the court of good King Cholera that year. But the miasma, vile though it was, could not hold a candle to this damned place.
Here's the elevator, Doc. Once we get down into the basement level close to the gateway, the smell shouldn't be as foul.
One of the few times I'm really looking forward to making a jump.
The elevator stood secure, its doors closed. Ryan looked at the coded panel beside the doors, checking his memory for the combination of letters and numbers that would give them access.
Green with envy? Claude Monet painted 19 pictures in his blue period. 5 of Edward Elgar's compositions made him red with anger.
Everyone stared at Doc for a few moments in total incomprehension. Mildred was the first to stumble onto what he was saying.
That's great, Doc. Excellent mnemonic for the code on the doors.
Then Ryan realized what was going on.
Green, CM, 19, blue, 5, EE, red. Yeah, that's what I make it. Everybody inside.
The smell of death and corruption was less overpowering down in the cooler passages that wound toward the gateway, but it was still there, lingering at the back of the mind, like a constant reminder of mortality. The cherry-red armaglass walls of the chamber stood cold and empty. Ryan waited for JB to join them, having made sure that the sectors were safely locked, keeping that part of the complex secure.
Everyone ready?
Maybe we should all hold hands. After what happened last time, next jump we might all go someplace else and then not be lucky enough to get back together again.
Doc stepped in first, and Mildred sat next to him. JB joined her, carefully putting his weapons by his side. Michael and Dean pushed each other in the doorway, kidding as they jostled, finally sitting down cross-legged, leaving a gap for Christy and Ryan. Ryan took a last look at the Kansas Redoubt, then firmly closed the heavy red door. The lock activated the Matrans process, and as Ryan sat beside Christy, the first tendrils of white mist were appearing near the ceiling of the chamber. Mildred held hands with JB and with Doc, who gripped Ryan's left hand in his right. Ryan felt his hand being squeezed by Christy, and suddenly thought that it would be nice to tell her how glad he was they'd survived another close one. It took an enormous effort of will, but he managed it. The words sounded infinitely far off. He thought she responded with pressure on his fingers, but he couldn't be sure.